I think what I see in Iran is the rise of this consciousness. When women go on the streets and they are like, this is not what we want. How else can you get that right that is taken from you? You have to take it. You have to take it back. It's almost the job of the woman to make things right. The woman is in charge, and yet she has no voice. How do I participate? What is my role here?
Hi, and welcome to In Conversation, an interview series exploring creativity, diaspora, and transformation. I am Reshma Rezvi, a producer and media maker inspired by the character of Shahrazad in 1001 Nights and her storytelling resistance. So I started the Shahrazad Squad.
And I'm Sonia Mehmand, co-producer and editor of this podcast. We're really excited to be included in Apple Podcasts Women's History Month collection and hope that you enjoy the conversation offered here today. This collection celebrates the past and present legacy of self-identifying women and has essential conversations for and by women while centering and celebrating intersectionality. We're grateful to be included in this collection, especially while we uplift the voices of Iranian artists during the Women Life Freedom Movement that's happening in Iran right now.
Join me as I talk to some of these Shahrazads with a small s, the women and non-binary creatives, cultural producers, and change agents, each engaged in transformational work. After all, stories plus sisterhood save the kingdom.
Woman Life Freedom, Zen Zendegi Azadi, has been the rallying cry for the revolution in Iran that began with Mahsa Amini's murder. This movement has been led by women and girls from the start. In today's episode, I talked to Iranian-American filmmaker Sabireh Kashi about ideas of womanhood, self-expression through filmmaking, and how in her travels back to Iran, she explores not just her own journey, but that of the feminine more broadly. Sabireh and I also talk about the inspiration for our squad, Shahrazad, and the importance of framing her as an archetype. Sabireh's take on how this relates to the current Woman Life Freedom movement is pretty interesting. We kick things off by talking about her documentary in progress, The Patient Woman, which chronicles her own story, traveling and finding her identity between the Bay Area and Iran.
So, Sabireh Kashi, welcome. Really excited to talk to you. As always, thank you for being here and thank you for your time. I want to hear about your own diasporic journey from Iran. And I also want to hear about your film project. And in your case, these two things are very much related.
Yeah, they're so intertwined. Because when I am making my film, then I realize that I have to reflect on my journey. And when I am reflecting on my journey, it is related to my film. I really have doubted myself so much in this journey. And I know that I'm not a regular filmmaker. I know that for sure. For me, it was always like a discovery, like filmmaking, even starting it was a discovery of finding ways of expression. And I think expression in itself has been like a big part of my journey, actually, expression, because I think expression is so much connected to identity. When we cannot express ourselves, then it's almost like then we are not. We're not in the narrative. We don't have a narrative. And when you don't have a narrative, you're not counted. When your narrative is not counted, then you are not counted.
Tell us a little bit, especially for someone who doesn't know about the film that you're making. How would you describe it?
I mean, recently I called it a personal essay verite documentary. That's maybe one way to put it.
Yeah, that's not a bad term at all.
Many years ago, I left my beloved parents in Iran to achieve what had attracted me to the United States. freedom for love and growth, responsibility of the individual, and believing in goodness. But I struggled to find home in this beautiful place. I had so many choices, yet I didn't connect to any of it.
Home and yet so far away from home.
Every time I visited Iran, I thought one day I would go back and stay. It captures 13 years of my life, or even 14 years, some ways in verite style, and I haven't been shooting myself all the time. I have shot events of my life during this time. Recently, it's been more about a lot of writing and the journey back then when I actually was shooting more, which was primarily after my divorce. I came to the United States with a marriage, which lasted for a very short time. So I was here by myself. But I was also questioning a lot of things that I was raised with. Having a family, like my mother was very traditional. And she thought the most important thing for a woman is to get married and to have children. That's your identity. And I wanted to know who I am before having a family or being a mother. The overarching theme of the film is me coming to my understanding that I do this as a woman. That was something that in Iran, it was harder to do because the majority of the society is still living with those traditional gender roles, or at least when I was there. I live in the Bay Area now, which is like really where people go to find who they are. And that was part of my journey to figure out who I am as a woman.
The film, in a way, contains these sort of layers of self-exploration, which I think are pretty fascinating. You've got a couple of moments where you are in the airport going back to Iran. You do go back, and you come back, and then you go back. In some of the early versions of the film, it was sort of based on this movement, right? And sort of these selves and how you're stitching together life and home with this movement, and then also with these questions you have about what home is, right?
I was still trying to figure out what is that story that I want to tell. By the way, that camera was given to me by Frontline Worlds. I had shot some footage the year prior in Iran when I went back and shot a very traditional grieving ritual in our ancestral city of Kashan, which is a very ancient city, 11,000 years of recorded history. My mother had sent me to see this ritual that her cousin was holding every year, and that was related to this Shia grieving ritual. Basically, they gave me this camera. It's called flip camera. So at that time, we still don't have smartphones, you know, like nowadays people shoot themselves on smartphones. But then for me, like getting that camera, and they told me, just shoot yourself as you're going back to Iran and shoot everything. And this idea of me talking to the camera almost to myself was a new discovery almost. What does that mean that I talk to myself? I also was very much interested in making films about Iran that was connecting to American audiences. As someone who is working in the media, it was very important for me to tell a story that is more authentic, it's more coming from the side of Iran. At the same time, I wanted Americans to understand it, you know? And at that time, there was a lot of talk about bridging Iran and America, and there were lots of people in Iranian American community that they were holding conversations and seminars. And so there was this interest in bridging the two countries and go, you know, over these walls of, you know, separation that had happened ever since the 1979 revolution. Like, how can we maybe like come back to each other again, you know?
We all, as filmmakers, you and I, we both know that there's a lot of directions you can go with a story and the way that your footage can tell a story of one kind. And I think that your film could have been a more traditional verite documentary. It could have been also more anthropological leaning in terms of this filming of the ritual. And I think, though, you've really created something that is quite personal. And I think the personal essay is a really good description of what it is.
The personal essays, a lot of it is about identity, as a woman, from where I come from, when it wasn't very spelled out, at least. I didn't see anywhere any narrative of women, of being a woman. What does that mean? In modern literature of Iran, we have poets like, you know, Farooq Farrokhzad, novelists like, you know, Simin Daneshwar, Shahnoosh Parsipur, many others who have been writing. It was hard for me, especially in older Iran, in a more traditional Iran, like, what are my roots? Where do I come from? There is a lot of talk about women, but who is the woman herself? Why doesn't she tell her story?
On one hand, you are interested in this sort of shape and narrative of yourself as a woman and what that means. And then you're also exploring this sort of deeper, almost like sort of subterranean elements in the culture through myths and archetypes of the feminine.
I knew that I wanted to look into the roots of being a woman in Iran at that time. And that's when I got to, you know, study Jung and study archetypes and study like an epic folk tale called Samake Ayar, which is the oldest actually that we have. And it was oral story for 2000 years. And then it was transcribed in 12th century. And I know that there is, you know, 1001 Nights, which is bringing us together. But this story that I was focusing on also has probably even a bigger significance in terms of its roots in Persian history and Persian culture. I mean, me and you have really talked a lot about Shahrazad, for example, she is an archetype, right?
You know, one of the things that, you know, you were really clear with me at the beginning too was talking about her as an archetype versus like a character. You know, often with me and others, you're like, well, she's more than a storyteller. She's more than a character in this book. It's an archetype, right? What do you mean by that?
Archetype, in my definition, is a collective experience of multiple characters. So it's not only one character. For example, when we say the archetype of father is collective experiences of fatherhood in a culture becomes the archetype of father in that culture. I really wanted to know about archetypes in Iranian culture, you know, archetype of woman. What is woman? Queen usually represents woman. If you read a story, like let's say if you read a fairy tale, according to Jungian analysis, queen usually represents the woman. And princess represents like sort of the new consciousness of a woman. Shahrazad is an archetypal queen.
Right. Right. And when we talk about the power of Shahrazad as an archetype, or the reasons, for example, that you and I would, and other people would sort of come together now in this contemporary time and have some kind of connection within this archetypal sort of feminine space, I think is important.
Yeah. So I think what is very central in the character of Shahrazad, really, she has several attributes that I think are very much shaping being a woman in Iran today. For example, being a woman is that you actually take it as your own responsibility to fix a situation that is very violent. It's almost the job of the woman to fix the issues and to heal the man and to make him behave. We have this narrative that, you know, patriarchy is protecting women. In Iran, at least, that's a huge narrative, you know, about like, oh, you are protected by the man as a woman. If it's your father or it's your husband, they are supposed to take care of you. They are supposed to take care of your expenses. And the right of a woman is that even if she's earning money, that the money belongs to her. She doesn't have to spend it in the family. The man is responsible for bringing money to the family. So the woman, in this sense, the woman is respected and she can focus on being a woman, which is like being a mother, taking care of the home and taking care of her husband and making things right. Then you go to outside world and the woman has to wear a hijab. So again, she is responsible for men who are walking on the streets to not feel attracted to her.
Right. To heal them of their attractions. I don't know.
Or to heal them from the attractions that they cannot control. And why is it that it becomes such a big issue about like woman has to wear hijab and protect herself from man acting on his attraction?
And in the story as well, it's not a normal time. It's completely out of balance. And you might say that there are some parallels to what's happening now in Iran as well, right? She has to step in because it's so out of balance and the king is so out of bounds and she may have a way to stop it. And I think that's an interesting part of it too, and an interesting parallel now, you know, and again, obviously keeps reoccurring through time and history and cultures. Iran is no like exception to this, right? And when you see what's happening right now in Iran with this movement, the woman life freedom movement right now, this understanding of Shahrazad and the archetypes that you do, do you connect like, oh, this is just one more story, like all the other old stories where women are being asked to take on this task of changing the men in the patriarchy?
It's just has caused so much trauma and so much sadness and the grief and the difficulties that people are going through, years of sanctions and threat of war and the violence that is going on in that region. Of course, pair that with these patriarchal notions to put that on women. And that just adds to the difficulty that women are experiencing. Where does this come from and what is the root of it? I think what is important for me in terms of like how I connect it to the archetype of Shahrazad is that the woman is responsible for whatever the man is doing. What he wants to see or he doesn't want to see, the woman is responsible for that. And the question is why? I am responsible to make them feel good. I am responsible to be their mother, you know, like this mothering. Why is it that we are identifying with that character so much? Iranian scholars, Iranian women scholars in American academia, they have been talking about going back to our roots, women who come from different countries and cultures. We don't necessarily have the same Western feminism perspective. Of course, we are informed by that, and that's part of our movement. There is a global feminism movement. We also have to dig into our own roots.
We all have this understanding patriarchy is not limited to that place and it's not a problem there. It's a problem here. It's a problem both, as you mentioned, in maybe women's personal lives and the personal small dramas, as well as these bigger, larger social dramas. How, if I could ask, do you think our particular squad or Manasa women or the Iranian diaspora support the movement, support this growth of consciousness?
I see a lot of blame that people put on this and that, this phenomenon, that government, this religion. I think it's important to move away from polarization. Polarization to me is very patriarchal. I think it's important that we look into ourselves and see how do we participate in it and acknowledge the hurt, by the way. We're dealing with a very complex situation. There is lots of taboos, lots of belief systems, lots of things that we're dealing with here. Those of us who live in diaspora, we are living with a different type of patriarchy and colonialism and all of that here. We cannot just hold one accountable. Everybody should be accountable. And I think we all have to be accountable.
As someone who, at least at one point, was traveling back and forth for a while, and maybe at some point would want to do again, if you could imagine any kind of Iran that you could return to, and then also any kind of United States you could come back to, what would you want to see both places?
Like in the feminine era, right?
Yeah. Yeah, girl.
Yeah. Yeah. I really like to see less and less and less of any central government power everywhere and power to communities and to people, and seeing people are leading a lot of feminine leadership, women leadership in those communities. And the feminine leadership is not about having someone in the top, it's about collective leadership. I have lived in communities for about like 14 years, and that's what I have seen. When there is no power structure, when there is nobody who is getting paid, if we all have to do it together to make it work, then it becomes very human and it becomes based on the ways we connect with each other, the way we really want to work with each other.
Yeah, it's a great vision. And I know that these times have been a lot of heaviness. It's not easy, I know, especially for you as an Iranian in the diaspora, hearing all this. Just curious, what brings you joy right now? What brings you joy or wonder or happiness at the moment?
Really just like being in the moment and connecting to God. And when I say God, it's just like really that universal truth. We are all part of one reality. We are creating ourselves. We are creating our world. We are creating our vibrations. Like Rumi says, beyond wrongdoing and right doing, there is a field. I meet you there. I think that is the field that brings me joy. All of us. I mean, that's where we really can experience it.
Thank you for listening. That was filmmaker Sabri Akashi. You can learn more about her work, upcoming documentary, The Patient Woman, on her production company's Facebook and YouTube page under Woven Multimedia to check out Sabri Akashi's work. The link to our website and socials is all in the notes, along with more information on our interviewees. Shahrazad Squad is spelled SHAHRAZADSQUAD. And that's all one word at www.shahrazadsquad.org.
I'm practically here by myself. I don't even have friends.
You have friends?
Well, I'm talking about that time. Yes, now I do, of course. Okay. I have so many friends now. Yeah. I'm talking about that like really the beginning. No, I have best friends now.
Sure. Yeah. If you're interested in joining the squad, and if you identify as a Swanasa woman, non-binary, creative, cultural producer, or change agent, you can find information on our website. Again, shahrazadsquad.org. We are hosted virtually in Mighty Networks. Did I mention we have some wonderful conversation cards available for purchase? These artist-designed cards feature fun and meaningful prompts that connect small groups of people, from families at dinner to a team meeting at the office. They're a great way to learn more about the people in your life and share stories. Each deck is $25 and fully goes to support squad activities and continue our project. You can find the link in the notes or again on our website. I produced the episode and it was edited and mixed by the wonderful Sonia Mermand.
That was beautiful and I was actually like crying.
The theme music is by squad member Naima Shalhoub.
Other music in this episode is by Paul Rubinstein.
The Squad is executive produced by Cal Shakes and funded in part by the Doris Duke Foundation for Islamic Art. We thank our supporters, our funders, and you, our listeners. Thanks for your support, and thanks again for listening. Stay tuned for our next episode.